This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored in part by TradeStation.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of The Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Storm clouds are rising. NASDAQ has its worst week since 2012. Foodstuffs are on fire. Citigroup's Economic Surprise Index is at the worst level since 2012. And there's a major rotation taking place. All this and much more on episode number 357 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, welcome. Andrew Horowitz here, and it is the Disciplined Investor Podcast beginning. The first of April is right around the corner, and that means that, well, another month is in the bag. We did see that March had quite a bit of upside opportunity and some selling came in. And towards the end of March, of course, we did see that the markets in the U.S. were in a distribution pattern. No question about that. And we did see selling that took place on a regular basis. Matter of fact, even last Friday, when the markets opened up higher and continued to move higher most of the morning, they turned around pretty viciously in the afternoon and left a bit of a bad taste in the mouth of the bullish investors, it seems, that were looking to really break it out again and see that V bottom that was expected from a few days of a downstroke in the markets to turn around very, very quickly. But it didn't. And that's all signs of distribution. Something important. Talked about in the beginning here, and I mentioned we have some storm clouds that are approaching, the storm warning that we're seeing right now. And clearly, markets are in a downtrend. They're yet not in a downtrend that's very substantial. And as we've seen in the past, that could turn around very quickly. Matter of fact, as we've seen in the past, that could turn around tomorrow. But right now, it is the end of the month, beginning of the new month. And what you do see is some tape painting that will go on that you'll see, because hedge funds and money managers are looking to bring the values of the stocks they hold higher in order to charge more at the end of the month. And in the beginning of the month, oftentimes you'll see that pension funds and other investors are looking to put money to work. And that's somewhat of what you've seen with that rotation that's been taking place lately. The rotation that I'm talking about is from technology and social media related, as well as biotechnology related stocks, into things like utilities, high dividend paying, and possibly even some of the industrials. Now, before we go anywhere today, I want to mention a couple of things that are important. First of all, on April 1st, which is Tuesday at 4:30 p.m., TradeStation is doing a spotlight on. They have a monthly series that they put together, and they are doing it on us, on Horowitz & Company, and our techniques, our processes, the ways that we look at managing money. And we're going to talk about things like, as an example, well, what kind of investor are you? And putting yourself in the proper place to invest as your investment style tells you. Some of the tools and techniques, some of the ways that we filter stocks from a screening standpoint, the old time and the ever popular quanta funda techna, which is quantitative, fundamental, and technical analysis that we use in order to put things together for portfolios, and whether or not you should be trading the junk, riding the Momo wave, using technical or fundamental analysis only or together, etc. So that's at 4:30 in the afternoon on April 1st. You can register over at TradeStation.com. We have some links on the website, thedisciplinedinvestor.com, as well, that will get you there. Just type in maybe in Google Spotlight on TradeStation, and it'll bring you right to that link. 4:30, 1 hour. It's a freebie, and I think you'll enjoy that. Well, let's talk about some of the things that we've mentioned in the past also very quickly. If you want to understand more about the Disciplined Investor Managed Growth Strategy, there is a link right on the website that's right there. The Arrow Strategy, which has returned 2,400% since 1995 when we tested it backward. And you'll see all about that, how it does it, simply by moving in and out of SPY. the SPY or short the SPY or being out. And all the statistics, all the measurements, all the history is available. Just go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com. It's there as well. All right. So when I talked about this rotation, it's pretty obvious. If you haven't noticed it, you see things like the Facebooks and the Twitters and the Teslas and the SolarCity, all the Momo names that have been moving. Netflix, wow, they've been getting just absolutely obliterated recently. And you saw the biotechs, the most money that came out of biotechs in the matter of, I don't know, 4 or 5 years happened over the last several weeks. And that's interesting because it happened very quickly. And what's the reason? You know, we saw that Facebook put up good numbers and there was a real incredible amount of buoyancy and move of Tesla. Yeah, there's some bad news there, but basically it was really good. What's going on? Well, here's a few things that you want to look at. We saw that Candy Crush King Digital Entertainment came out to the market last week, lost 20% already after its IPO. Now, we talked about how this is probably a one-hit wonder and how that, you know, this is probably not something you want to be involved in. We have the memories of Zynga fresh still there, I think, and Groupon's really still there. But when you look at the particulars between with this IPO, that it came to market in the middle of its range and it immediately traded down, that's not a healthy sign for what we would call the risk-on trade. You also saw, for example, that the biotech cap, the biotech small cap and the biotech index were also hit, which is the best performing stocks of 2013. Well, you saw that the NASDAQ and the social media all are under distribution. Now, that's interesting, especially when you're looking at a 7% drop in the biotech index over the last several weeks. 5 weeks it's been losing. The Russell 2000, the small caps, fell all but one day during the week, down 1% this year, which is interesting because it's ready to be posting its first of a six-quarter winning streak. It's going to break that. Biggest stretch, longest stretch since 1996. Now, the VIX still is not doing much, but utilities and phone shares in the S&P 500 are moving. They're rising about 1.5% last week. Energy stocks rallied 2.5% last week. And this is after oil is climbing to a 3-week high. Facebook's down 11%, which is really interesting, even though it's up 135%. Netflix dropped 12% after there was this discussion that Comcast is going to be streaming on the Apple platform. And you see things like Vertex Pharmaceuticals down 8.5%, Alexion, which is down 6%. And this is kind of what we've been seeing, that the winners are seeing distribution as profit-taking is taking hold. Yeah, we did see some good things that were playing out in the banking sector. No question about that, because we did see in advance of the stress test that banks were really rising high, knowing that, you know, the Fed's stress tests aren't going to show anything negative. Let's be honest. We know it's all about just making things look good. And that's what it did with everything except pretty much a couple of them there. But Citibank, oof, man, that was hit pretty hard. In fact, it was, I think it was down about 6% on the news that they were not able to be returning shareholder capital in the form of higher dividends and doing any buybacks. But here's what's really interesting. When all those things put together I just mentioned, when we look at the 52-week highs from last week, we had a total of about 80 companies in the U.S. composite that had valuations of over $500 million that hit all-time highs at the end of Friday. 29 were in the energy sector, 10 were in utilities. Otherwise, it was distributed pretty much evenly, 5 or 6 in each of the sectors, otherwise consumer discretionary, staples, industrials. But 29 in the energy sector, and many of those were related to natural gas and drilling and also the area of finding the resource, you know, going out and doing the reconnaissance and finding it. Now, what's interesting about that is that if you think about the sectors for a second, really, what are we talking about? They're related to assets, tangible assets, in terms of the energy area. They're also in the utility area, the higher dividend and the constant payment process. So you have utilities that are collecting money for whether it's going to be in the telecom we mentioned also, it's going to be in the area of constant payment so that you know that you're going to get a nice stream of income, your cash flow is good, and you have something to be backed up in the event that earnings slow down and the economy slows down. Now, back this right into the Economic Surprise Index from Citigroup, which, by the way, is a pretty interesting way of looking at things. Because if you looked at things like, oh, just the unemployment rate or just the manufacturing index from Philadelphia, or whatever you want to look at, you could say, okay, well, it looks better. And we're seeing that also that, okay, maybe there's some consumer confidence that's returning. But when you total them all up and you look at what analyst expectations were and what the actual numbers are, that's where there's a significant amount of divergence. Now, the worst in the world, by far, is China. Their numbers are dating back to like 2008, 2009 in terms of the Economic Surprise Index. They are continually underperforming. They are continually surprising to the downside with their economics. And that's pretty fascinating. This is a country that is very much in a position that India was in about a year and a half ago, where they had inflation concerns. They had some areas in the economy that were being really ripping higher, but yet at the same time, they did not want to add stimulus as things were starting to cool off because they were actually the creators of the process to cool off the economy. They wanted to slow down things. They wanted to actually have inflation drop. And one of the best performers this year is India because you know what? When they finally halted the process of slowing their economy on a regular basis, it was able to ramp up. I guess what we're saying here is, you know, don't fight the Fed. And if you're not fighting the Fed now, where's your positioning? Now we can make an argument. Well, they're still stimulating. $55 billion per month is going into bonds and purchasing of debt instruments. And interest rates are still 0 to 0.25%, essentially the lowest in history. So where is the Fed? Well, the Fed is one foot in, one foot out. They're actually in the process of removing stimulus. They're still stimulating, but the longer-term prospect is clearly of one, as we have seen recently, that they're in the thought process of raising rates and removing the bond buying, the quantitative easing, by approximately the end of this year. Now, if you wanted to get ahead of the Fed, and if you wanted to think about times when the Fed was in fact going to do a super stimulus program, think about 2008, 2009, when all of a sudden markets started turning and things really weren't that good. We saw a lot of economic numbers and earnings really still falling, but stocks started to move higher. And why was that? Well, the prospect of the Fed coming in with a quantitative easing program that was going to be in play for a while really took hold, and that was something that was very beneficial for the markets. Don't fight the Fed that way. Well, if you can really say that don't fight the Fed, and the Fed is a big part of the current market condition, you have to be of the camp that, you know what, I may want to start thinking about getting a little bit less bullish, a little bit less long. Because what we're seeing is a Fed that is committed to starting to pull back. That can change, of course. And we can make up all sorts of excuses why the Fed will be there forever. And all sorts of rationale and reasoning. But if we really want to look objectively, just for a moment, if you think about this, you really have to say that the Fed is reversing course. And if you want to be objective and try not to have this bullish overlay, realize that just as things were still pretty awful back in 2009, and earnings were awful, and stocks looked like they were just never going up ever, we're in the same condition now. We have a constant buy in the dip, constant move into stocks, all sorts of excuses on weather and issues about why things aren't so good, but the worldwide condition is slowing. take a look. And on top of that, the Fed is now committed to reducing stimulus. Add that all up and the rotation that we're seeing now, and unless something is drastically changing that I am unaware of, and if in fact cycles in fact don't mean anything anymore, which I don't think that's the case, because every time you think that, by the way, you realize, whoop, bad idea. I mean, every time you think, now it's different. Oh, now I'm going to go against the Fed, and you know the Fed's pulling out and maybe raising rates, and you know now it's different because everything is good. Remember that at the bottom, at the trough, at the worst time when people were going to be thinking about buying stocks and the Fed stepped in and we saw that incredible move off the bottom back in 2009, think about where we are today. When people think that, you know what, stocks are the only place, you don't want to do anything but buy in, don't be short, don't go out, be long, be, you know, with the wave, and earnings are never going to roll over and balance sheets are really good. Well, things change. Just look at a long-term chart and you'll see that. Now, do they change immediately? No. But maybe what we saw in the beginning of this year in January, and again, some of the effects that we're seeing now with a move into utilities and energies and more of the large cap dividend paying stocks, well, maybe that's something to be, you know, you can really start to think about and something you may want to take heed of. In addition to that, you have to look at the fact that we're seeing that costs are rising dramatically when it comes to food. Now, still, we're seeing very little, if any, inflation using the metrics that the Fed uses, but let's talk about really what's going on. So, what we're finding is that food, corn, as an example, is up 16%, the cost of corn this year. Wheat up 14%. Soybeans up 10%. Sugar up 10%. Cotton up 10%. Coffee, want to guess what coffee is up this year? Coffee futures? 63%. Wow. 63%. Now, if you don't think that's going to have an effect on some of the places that sell coffee, I think unless they have their own farms, and if they have their own farms, and if they're able to deal with drought conditions because they're special, and if they're able to deal with all the things that are causing the coffee crop to be problematic this year because they're special, ha, okay, great, just amazing. But realize that when you're looking at, on average, these costs to be up 10, 12, 14% this year, who does that hurt? You know, look at when I saw these kind of cost rises that were consistent over time, it's still not there. But when they started to rise and corn was, you know, rocketing towards 9 and you saw wheat was moving and you saw that that foodstuffs, I mean, beef prices are going crazy. Pork bellies are at the highest they've been in a while. When you see that kind of situation, you have to look at the McDonald's of the world and realize why their same store sales are off and why their profitability may be down. What about Chipotle, the cost factors involved in Chipotle when they were going to raise menu prices, but they held back because they were seeing such question in terms of their margins? These are areas that you need to look at and realize the fact that food and energy are some of the things that we need to do and have and use on a regular basis. As a human being, I need nourishment. I need to buy food. That cost goes higher, it's going to come out of something else. And obviously, it's going to come out of my discretionary spending unless I am willing to increase my debt and increase the debt via credit cards or maybe home loans or whatever it may be. Now, obviously, if it's only a short-term situation, okay, we're good. But if it extends and it continues to go, as we've seen what happened in India, what's happening in China, what's happening in Latin America, with the fact that inflation is a major problem, and if that continues in the U.S., discretionary spending will slow down. No question about it. Now, while you hear that many of the players out there talk about, gas at the pump prices are up, but that doesn't matter. But yet when they say that gas at the pump are down, oh, that's good for consumer discretionary spending. Take that with a grain of salt. Realize that why they're on TV and realize that usually when they get booked, they have to be positive about something or they're not invited back. So when you're listening to those prognosticators, those analysts out there that are talking about how no matter what it is good for the economy or at least not detrimental for the economy, they have an axe to grind. They have a book that they're talking. They have a process that they're doing to try to probably be on television or radio And that's the only thing that they can talk about and the only thing they know. So, they, you know, you have to realize that. Use your head here, folks, right? Let's use our smarts. Let's use our understanding that, okay, trends will usually last a much longer time than we ever think possible. The downstroke of a market, the downstroke of an economy, and the upstroke as well will last much longer than any of us probably can believe. But when it turns, don't be in a position that you're just going to say, you know what, I don't see it, I don't hear it, I don't know about it. Don't cover your eyes, don't cover your ears. Look at the reality. One of the things that's really important in investing is, first of all, to realize that what is the truth? The truth is, well, price. My good friend Brian Shannon always says, it's only price that pays. Whether or not you believe that the stock is valued at a certain level and is valued too high or not is not important if you're looking at just the price. If you are buying a stock and you think it's worth 60 and the thing drops to 30, you're wrong. If you're shorting a stock and you're shorting it at 60 and it goes to 120, you're wrong. Maybe you're not wrong forever, though. Twitter, I thought it should be a short. It ran up, and then it's come back down below the 48 level, which was a key support level, and it moved quite lower, and I think there's a lot more downside to it. Now, whether or not markets will adjust to that now or later, or whether or not it will ever happen, and I have to adjust my expectations of where it should be, is yet to be seen. But the fact of the matter is that just look at what happened with Netflix over time. Remember how Netflix drove higher and was a short by some of these big hedge funds, and everybody was pounding and saying it's going to be an absolute short, and it ran up, I mean, quadrupled. Then, magically, it came down to, what was it, down to 50? I mean, from hundreds down to 50, and now it rode back higher. Well, now you're seeing that there is some kind of alternative opinion that's going in on this. The same thing's happening with Amazon. In the opposite direction, the same thing's happening with Microsoft. Same thing happened with Apple. Banks are now really doing well. There's a really good sense of sentiment out there about banks, and they're doing well. For the longest time, there was no one who really wanted to buy these things. So when you look at this, try to be objective. Try to say, where is the stock trading? Where is the economy? Where is the Fed? Where are markets? Is there a tremendous amount of selling that's going on high volume? And how long is that going to last? And where do I want to position myself? Are we in a position right now that there's a lot of euphoria that's going on? Because you know what? In the last couple of years, every single time that stocks would go down, they'd go right back up. Don't get caught up in that. Be nimble. Be able to change your opinion. That is some of the most important information, some of the most important lessons that you could learn. They're very hard to learn, but be able to change your opinion if the circumstances are deemed to be so that you should. That doesn't mean that if you believe from every bit of research that you do that Netflix should be a $12 stock and it moves up to $500, well, you don't get caught up in the rise and hold on to it. You may not want to buy it, but you don't get caught up in it. But if it does turn, you may want to latch on to that short again. If, in fact, you think that the marijuana stocks are the best thing ever to be offered and they're really trading in the, you know, dollar range and they're not getting any movement, okay, you could buy them. But if they move down to 10 cents again, maybe you don't want to be there. But yet, if they do start to turn around, the trend does change. Hey, that's your signal that, you know what, maybe I need to change my opinion or reinforce my opinion here. But to stick to your opinion forever on something is probably not the best idea because it can hurt you. So have an opinion, but be nimble and realize that things won't always go in the direction that you want them to go. And at the same time, be ready to attack when the timing is right. Now, we're still not seeing that the markets are selling off so terribly. Although, you know, if we look month to date, the Dow Jones Industrial and the S&P 500 are flat. The NASDAQ's down about 3.5%. But you know what's really quite amazing? As we talk about the foodstuffs, DBA, which is the an agricultural ETF, is up about 47%. 47% month to date. And that, again, with the other stocks that are up, is showing me that there's a change in sentiment. And I got a lot of emails recently about confusion over the markets. Like, where are we? A lot of people said, you know, hey, listen, I see the markets are going down, but they're going up. Do I just buy in and stay long? Ask me about some stocks, you know. And by the way, ask Andrew at thedisciplinedinvestor.com is the place that you can actually send emails anytime. I'll be happy to answer them. We don't really answer specific stock questions back and forth one-on-one. We'll have those special episodes of the podcast that will talk about that. But realize that this confusion is not only yours. There's a lot of confusion out there, and that's where you see the significant movements and the pushing and pulling of markets. Right now, we still have a lot of problems in Russia. The news is trying to play it down. The issues in China are extremely significant. In Japan, there's a lot of sentiment that is lost, has dropped over the Shinzo Abe plan, and you see that that market is down pretty significantly this year. As a matter of fact, I think it's down. I think the Japanese market's down about 12% this year, and they're not able to hold it. Let's see. Do I have that here? Let me see if I have that note of exactly what it is. Nope, I don't. But it's down about 11%, and you're seeing the topics and the Mother's Index are really getting hurt this year as well. One of the best indices this year is Vietnam, which is kind of coming out of the ashes here. They're doing very well. So there's some pockets of very good market conditions out there in the world. But you know what? We here in the U.S., I think, are still due for a very significant correction to get rid of a lot of the excess. Now, some of that is occurring, as I mentioned, in some of the more momentum-based names, but that will spill over eventually. And some of that's going to be due to some of the economics. Now, right now, there's a lot of confusion on what the Fed's going to do. Let's talk about some of the economics, because they're going to be looking at all these different things on a regular basis. Next week, we have the biggie at the end of the week, which we'll get to in a second, but we have the manufacturing index on the 1st, a couple things on Monday, Chicago, ISM, Milwaukee, not the most important. But we do have the ISM manufacturing number coming out, and that's expected to be 54, a little bit more than last month. It was 53.2. Prices paid are expected to drop a little bit. Construction spending is expected to be flat. I do have an issue with the overall potential for construction and for building. There's going to be probably a good amount of construction and building growth in the area of multifamily housing rentals. I do see the potential for a slowdown in the area of single-family homes due to the fact that there really is pretty much a good amount of inventory on the markets right now. And there's some concern that we've been hearing about from the builders that are very worried about the spring season. Look at symbols like a DHI, Lennar, look at also KB Homes, look at Hovavian. These are stocks that could come under some pressure here. But we're going to be seeing that construction spending is coming out on the 1st at 10 o'clock in the morning. We have also, of course, on the 1st throughout the day, we're going to see domestic vehicle sales and total vehicle sales. Looking at pretty good numbers, actually, 12.5 million overall, looking for on an annual basis on domestic total vehicle sales, about 5.8, which will be, I think, an annual record. Then we also have things like the ADP employment on Wednesday, looking for 190,000 jobs added after 139,000 last period. The idea is that there's a lot of people coming back to work and hiring is going on after the whole weather thing has really been, you know, kind of behind us here. And then we have factory orders looking for about a 1.2%. Now, that is going to be a year-over-year number. We saw a negative 0.7%. And that, again, has to do with weather. We'll see if that really plays out. We have initial jobs on Thursday, continuing claims, of course. ISM non-manufacturing. Now, this is interesting. This is a service index, which is about 70% of the U.S. economy is service-related. You know, this has been really dropping. It was 51.6, one of the lowest levels it's been in a while last month. They're looking for a 53.5. I think a lot of that has, again, to do with the snapback after weather, but I wouldn't be too surprised if we're going to have a problem in that area. And then Friday is the big one. We have the unemployment rate expected to be 6.6%, a little bit lower than last month at 6.7. Looking for a little bit of rise in hourly earnings and hourly hours worked, a little bit of a rise there as well. The unemployment rate is I guess, expected to be the 6.6 because we're going to see the participation rate about flat. And 194,000 jobs added on the private and non-farm in the 200,000 range. Last period, it was 175,000 on the non-farm, which was a good number. But you start seeing these numbers really do very well, and that's going to be a problem again because that will confirm that the Fed is going to be backing off. So consider that. Let's take a quick moment to talk about TradeStation. I think it's a good time to do that. As we're talking about trends, as we're talking about what to play, what to look at, how things are going, and the ability to change your opinion on something, one of the best ways to do that, the only ways to do that really, is to look at the trends, and you do that through charts. Now, TradeStation is a lot more than charting, of course, but you can look at an incredible array of pre-canned and pre-programmed charting or add your own. You can program your own. You can also go to the Trading App Store, where the only system that I'm aware of that has something like this, where you can go and get access to professional trading algorithms as well as charting indicators available right as a plugin into that. It works very nicely. And they also have the platform that gives you great execution. Their matrix is one of the best there is for trading, whether it's future stocks, Forex, ETFs, etc. And TradeStation has what I think is some of the best software and brokerage ability in the industry. You can get it for free for 90 days. Go over to TradeStation.com. You go over to the website, thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Right in the middle of this show note, we have a link to get you that special offer. And you know what? You can't go wrong. You try it out. You see if you like it. I think the way that it's designed from its radar screen, which you can't find anywhere else, which is like having a mini chart. You can actually have your indicators right there, have alerts. Hey, you know what? You're crossing up on your MACD, you're crossing down your stochastics, you're moving higher above the 20-day or the 30-day moving average. You don't have to have a chart up. You can have 75 different stocks ready to go, and you can put your alerts right in there. Hey, alert me if it crosses up, it's 50-day, and it crosses up, it's 200-day, and it's MACD crosses up. Bing, bing, bing. It hits you. You know what's going on. How many times have you lost that ability because you're waiting for a stock chart that hasn't been on your screen and you're waiting and waiting and you finally, oh man, look at it, did it already. So it happens live for you. TradeStation.com, great stuff, great platform to look at, and you can get all of that access and free trading for 90 days free at TradeStation right now. So check it out. I think it's very much something that you should be working with. We love it. I use it for charting. It's just a great place to centralize all of your trading ideas, looking at trends, etc. Check it out. You'll be glad you did. You know, earnings season is going to be coming up very shortly. We started a little bit already. The official earnings season starts with Alcoa. That's at least what has happened in history. The 8th of April, which is a week from Tuesday, is going to be the time they come up. Alcoa has actually moved up very nice. A lot of good anticipation into earnings that's expected here. If you look at the stock chart, it's actually done quite well. As a matter of fact, it's done extraordinarily well. You know, some of the reasons are that aluminum pricing is better. Car sales are better. They're closing some of the smelters. So there's a lot of positive trends that are working on their behalf. But if we just back up just ever so slightly for a second, and we look at the earnings season of the stocks that have come out recently. The stocks that are looking at their earnings for this season that are out already, that come out late in the prior season, if you understand what I'm saying there. It's kind of like they're out late in the prior season, but it really counts for this season. And you look at what's going on, numbers are not so good so far. You look at a FedEx, you look at that, for the most part, the consumer staples are the only area, only a few stocks out, maybe 18, but consumer staples are doing better. But generally speaking, boy, that's pretty miserable looking. Now, we'll see, obviously, what happens with the banks if they ran up too much according to what their pricing should be to their earnings. If the yield curves and the separation and the incline of that curve has really helped them. But we're going to start seeing this next week. Now, here's one warning that I want to throw out there. There have been many times that over the last several quarters that in between earnings season, at the last couple of weeks into earnings season, there's been a lot of concern. And we've seen that there has been sell-offs and we're seeing that a rotation took place very much like what we're seeing now. And then earnings season comes around and it may be a little bit mixed in the beginning, but stocks really have a pretty good time of it because obviously companies know how to manage their earnings. They know how to really throw out the advertisement of what the expectations should be. They massage their guidance. They really work it pretty well so that they have the ability to beat by 1 or 2 cents. That's the game, right? That's the game. You know, you look at companies that have missed, and what do? They issue a buyback. They issue a dividend. So that holds the stock up. You look at companies that beat by a wide margin, well, the stock's taken up pretty well afterwards. So everything that a company is involved with is all about doing their best to manage the expectations and to keep that stock higher because, of course, management owns a good deal of it. Now, there are times when they just can't do that. But with interest rates low as they are, they're able to do what they can to refinance debt, to offer dividends, to do buybacks. But, you know, again, to harbor back to what we talked about in the beginning and how, in fact, there could be a sea change coming in terms of the expectations of what the Fed's going to do and longer term interest rates, you have to think about, wait a minute, is that going to continue? Are we going to see the unprecedented amount of buybacks that go on continue? Are we going to see the ability for an IBM to pretty much dismantle their entire business structure and just do what they can to buy back as many shares to keep their EPS growing, even as their sales are slowing? I don't know. It's yet to be seen. But it can't go on forever if interest rates rise. We know, again, that the cycles will have a very strong component and influence on how management and the ability of management to do the things that they've been doing lately. There's just so much they can clean up their balance sheets. They've done it. If they haven't done it yet, too late. If you haven't done it, or I haven't done it yet, too late. Interest rates pretty much have probably, unless something bizarro happens, reached the low that you and I will see in our lifetimes. Do you disagree? You think they could possibly go lower than they've been? Maybe they can go lower than they are right now, but really, I don't think so. Fact of the matter is that if the Fed is taking their foot off, they're taking out $10 billion a month of buying, and the fact is that interest rates have the potential to go higher, and they're signaling that interest rates will go higher. They'll go higher on their own. That's the communication strategy and the communication plan and the program of the Fed, is to communicate to manipulate, not in the negative sense, but manipulate markets in a way that they can then move the rates at the level that they want them to be. So now, what do you do? Well, you could look at things like a TBT, which is an inverse 20-year. The 20-year and the longer bond usually will get hit harder. But you could also look at some options. We've been looking at some options, longer-term options, puts on TLT. Because if you look at the move that can happen with bonds, and usually it will happen very quickly, out of nowhere, bond prices can really drop. And you probably, if you have a good portion of your portfolio in bonds, you may want to protect that. Now, one of the things you have been seeing is a highly correlated market where you see the stock prices go up and bond prices go up. And you have to stop for a second and say, wait a minute, let's think. How does that happen? People are buying stocks and they're buying bonds. Meaning, is excess money in the markets, excess liquidity in the markets, and where'd that come from? Well, it could be the retail investors on the side. It could be the hedge funds that have excess money to spend. It could be margin. We did see a tremendous amount of leverage and margin that was involved on the books of hedge funds, the highest that had been in history, really, about 2 months ago. And they're starting to bring that down. They're starting to deleverage. When they do that, you'll see the momentum stocks moving first, probably, because those are the ones they need to kind of get off of their books, because those are the ones that have the highest potential of breaking their backs. And that's what you're seeing. Now, take a look at some of the longer term, maybe the September, October, November, maybe even December, the puts on TLT as a good way to not only play the potential for a reducing amount of buy by the Fed and an increasing interest rate, but also some protection, because when money comes out of the market, it comes out of some of the easiest places first also. And when you look at bonds and the pricing that has been so high and relatively liquid, well, if liquidity is going to dry up, those prices may not be as easy. And if they are sold, will drop very quickly. Looking for liquidity, you pull out of things that you know you're not going to hurt. If you're a hedge fund manager, if you're a mutual fund manager, if you're an institutional manager, you go after those places that you know are not going to get hurt. And then you got to start cleaning up the other places. The places that aren't going to get that hurt are the ones you're not even going to notice when they sell. The places that are noticed are where they go next. And when they do that, you notice it. Like we're seeing with the Russell 2000. Like you're seeing with some of the NASDAQ stocks. One of the places that may be, yes, they may be rotating back into bonds, but they have a pretty good portion of their money in bonds right now. So it's not like the old days where it was a bond or stock or a stock or bond or gold versus stock. They put everything in and everything out at once. And if you remember back to the last year, how everything was moving in and out, risk on / risk off or liquidity on, liquidity off, things can move in tandem. Now, when markets get back to normal where there isn't a Fed constantly involved, you'll see, okay, risk trade, when the trading moves into gold, there's a risk trade that is off and move into bonds and out of stocks. That's normal. Hello, right? For those of you that are new at this, that are only doing this a few years and you think normal is everything into stocks, everything into gold, everything into food, everything into commodities, everything into bonds all at once, or everything out of all those at the same time. That is not what has gone on historically over the last 100-something years or however long you want to look at markets. And you may say to me, well, it's a new market condition. No, sorry, not. It's just not. The market condition that is logical, normal, and makes the most sense is that you go into the safer assets. This is what human nature will do, what emotions will drive you to, and what good money managers will do with their money. They'll put money into bonds. They will take money out of stocks. They'll put money into gold. And they'll put money into hard assets and tangible items when things aren't good. They'll put the money into stocks. They'll take the money out of bonds. And they'll take the money out of gold when things are good. But that's only considering normalized liquidity when they don't have anybody else's money to play with and the backup of the Fed or the implicit guarantees that, hey, don't worry, nothing fails. If you had your money invested in something that is implicitly backed, you'd put as much money into it. If you went to the casino and they said, hey, you can bet as much as you want on roulette, don't worry, at the end of the night, we'll give you money back. You're betting. You're betting pretty good. Now, they say, hey, you know what? Bet all your money, but you can't get any more, but we'll give you your money back. All right, you'll bet more cautiously. Now, if they say, bet all you want, whatever happens, happens. You're going to be even more cautious. And finally, if they say, you know what? If you bet and what you win, you win, but what you lose, we're going to double your losses. You'll be, oh, wait a minute. I got to be really careful here. And what I'm saying about that, which may sound strange, is in a situation where markets become more volatile, which is the last example I gave there, where the potential to lose more is there, people will become more and more cautious. And as such, they'll take more and more money out and only play on the things that are more safer, let's call it, or guaranteed, or at least have a better shot with alternative for income, as in utilities, maybe also have some implicit guarantees or, let's say, bonds, or even have some backstop, which we could say has some tangible items behind it, whether it's heavy cash on the books or whether it's a tangible item, like as in the oil companies. Now, is this all making sense? Is it all coming together? Think about what's going on. Everything I'm talking about, if it makes any sense to you at all, is kind of what's going on right now, right? Now, I don't think we're going to fall out of bed here automatically. I still think there's a lot of the buy and the dip that's left there. You see that's going on. You see that the markets will just ramp up really quickly. Any news item? Tesla came out with a news item on Friday late. Over the weekend, it was publicized that they'll be able to continue doing what they're doing in sales to a degree in New York, at least that New York didn't act like New Jersey. You may see a nice pop on that. You know, you may see that Netflix, there's some news out that says, well, you know, we're not going to see as much of a problem with Amazon because Amazon's coming out with a free service that's reliant on advertising. So that's going to be competition. You see the Comcast Apple deal. Well, that's going to be competition. Who knows where else? What about Pandora? What about Shutterfly? Apple and the big boys are competing with these guys and they ran up into it anyway. Will Pandora continue to do so? Do they have a superior product to Apple Radio? And is Amazon going to come out with some alternative to music that's free that will swamp it or not? So I think that it's interesting to watch this. Now, biotech's the one area that is a bit confusing. Why is it being sold so hard? Why was it being bought so hard? You know, when you look at the population of the world and you look at the aging of that world and you look at the need for new medicines, et cetera, to fight for cancer, orthopedic designed nuances in terms of robotic surgery, you look at all the different things that are going on around the world, the patent drop-off, the companies that are buying other companies, maybe they ran up a little bit because of the potential excitement over the acquisition spree that was going on for some time. Maybe the fact that some of these drugs are available, but yet at the same time, now this is being looked into because of the high costs that are being charged for some of these designer drugs being used for, whether it's cancer, for heart, or other conditions, diabetes, etc. But yet at the same time, there's an absolute need. There's an incredible need for this aging population because we're survivorless. We want to stay alive. We'll do anything we can to stay alive. We've seen that in human nature. And if, in fact, we can do so by creating drugs that will allow us to have a longer life, we will do so. And as such, these companies are not only good acquisition targets, but really good companies to begin with. You know, you look at Regeneron, or you look at Questcor, you look at, you know, the old line companies like Bristol and Pfizer. You know, these are companies that have a bright future. The question is whether overpriced or not is another story. You look at a Gilead, you look at some of these other names. I mean, wow, some of these very compressed mutual funds that have, and ETFs that have a high preponderance of names that are in the biotech at the top of the list have been just whacked. I mean, down 20, 30% over the last few weeks. I think there's a buying opportunity coming up in some of these. I think that many of these names actually have a great opportunity once they flush. You got to wait for the flush. Got to wait for the capitulation. Boom. They drop. They're down 30, 40%. Keep these on your radar. One of the best ways to do this is go to like the biotech ETFs that are out there or go to mutual funds and find the positions that are out there in there and find what they're holding. These are the positions that are obviously being sold off right now because they're trying to lighten up their portfolio. But these are the names that probably have the greatest prospect long term as well. Put those on your watch list. Put an alert when they start to base out, when they turn, find that support level, and then look to buy into them if, in fact, there is that time that they come out that maybe earnings are better than expected and maybe the selling spree stops. Now, again, we'll talk about that buying and selling, bull and bear, cycle, trend up, trend down will last a lot longer than you anticipate. So maybe be careful now if this big trend of selling the biotechs and taking the profits is starting to wear off. But be aware that you can start nibbling. Nothing wrong with taking partial positions. So take a look at the biotechs as a place that may be an area that you want to put on your watch list. Now, if history goes as it does, the short history is that you'll see this turn around and go V-like any day now. But the reality is that, you know what? If, in fact, we're getting into a more normalized cycle, you'll see that these are going to sell off for a while. They'll come back a bit. Maybe they'll move up about halfway, a bit retrace some of their losses, come back down, test those bottoms again, and somewhere along the line, that second test or third test is where you're going to find that the opportunity really lies. We're going to keep a watch on many of those names as well in our portfolios because I think there is some opportunity, and there will continue to be in some of the names as they come in and as there's a better price point on many of these. So, April 1st, we're going to be having that TradeStation webinar. And I want you to attend that if possible. Watch also for triggercharts.com. We're going to have some webinars on the various indicators, the aileron and the altimeter, et cetera. The aileron is really awesome. We're also going to be putting up a video on Aero, how it actually performed so darn well in that time period when the S&P is up 350, 400%, and this thing did 2,400%. Net of fees, net of costs, net of slippage, you know, net. After everything, it returned 2,400%, and why it's doing that? How does that happen? What is this whole process all about? And we're in the process of looking at seeing if we can actually design something for precious metals in the same vein. Pretty cool stuff. So if you're interested, you listen, if you want somebody to manage your money, if you're looking for, hey, where are we? I'm not sure what to do right now. And you'll like many of those questions that have come into me recently. We have several different portfolios. We have the global allocations, or more traditional styling of investing. You can find out more about that, of course, or the TDI Managed Growth Strategy, or simply the Aero Strategy. Just everything is on TDI website, thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Make sure to visit that and make sure to tell your friends about the podcast. I really appreciate it. That's why it's so popular, obviously, and gets great reviews. I really appreciate all your input, all your reviews, and all the things that you have to say, and our interaction and friendship. Keep it up. Thanks for joining me. We'll talk again next week with Das. He's coming on board to talk to us, and everybody loves Das. We'll see you then. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations, and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor, regulated in various states. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.